50208 Media.
And now, on with the show.
Hello, hello, everyone. This is a beautiful Sunday morning, and we're all gathered around doing our favorite thing, recording amazing podcast episodes for you. Big in on all the musical stuff. We're having a good time, and hope you're excited because we really, really, really are. I am Shannon Widener.
What was your middle name?
Shannon. Ooh.
You can come up with a new one. They were bad last time.
You were Shannon
Jazz Square.
Shannon Jazz Square Queen Widener. That's me. To my right, as always, we've got Carter.
With a capital.
Oh, with yes. With a capital T that rhymes with P, which stands for pool.
Or I thought it was with a capital. Trouble. With a capital T, and that rhymes with C, and that stands for Carter
Spilliards. For Carter Spilliards. Yes. All of that.
All of that.
My God.
And then, of course, Phoenix. Trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for Phoenix the Roller.
Yeah.
Yes, that I will not be repeating that.
Yeah, same.
It's all the same reference.
It's all the same good stuff. And then, last but not least.
It was Robbie. Grandjeté de Chaser. Yeah.
I thought of a good nickname.
Welcome to Film Fracas. I don't know if we said Film Fracas.
Musical related. Mm-hmm. Call me Bass Clef.
Call me Bass Clef? I don't know how it feels.
Call me by your Bass Clef.
That sounds like trouble to me.
Isn't that rhymes with?
You guys want to start this over
cool.
after that one?
Cool.
You want to go back and redo that joke?
That's just how Bass Clef rolls.
Jazz Clef.
Jazz Clef.
No.
But yes, it's wonderful and it's exciting. And this week on Film Fracas for our musical season,
we are going
to be discussing the finer elements of production design. One of my favorite categories, absolutely. So that covers everything from. We're defining costume design to color palette choices to set design, all kinds of structural elements, basically everything that comes together and creates the visual world that we live in these musical films.
These are productions. Who designed them? Let's find out.
Let's find out.
Are you going to read it off for us?
I don't know. I don't have a list.
I do think it's a good category because musicals always seem to have a very like showy and vibrant production design. So
that's true.
It seemed like we had to do it for this season.
If you guys can talk for a little bit, I can find out all the production designers.
Oh, we can talk.
Oh yeah.
I have no doubt we can talk.
We run a podcast, so if we don't think we can talk, you know,
this is definitely stop talking right now.
Yeah, we're definitely talking. I mean,
keep going.
We are talking about great things. Certainly.
But yeah, you know, like I think what Shannon said nailed all the parts of production design. I think the way we are going to classify, like, how we prioritize one or how we, respond to one will be different person to person. But I think overall,
as it always
those
is,
different categories. Yeah, I'm ready for the hot
sometimes
take that'll happen.
More drastic than others,
yeah.
But yeah, I know I've got a few.
I had a pretty definite number one.
Yeah, my number one was
100%.
Also, I think. My go-to,
I
thought it would be, and I was like,
this is where it's at.
All right, yeah, no, that's, before we get into all those, though, I have our list of production designers.
Excellent.
Woo!
So, for the movie Hairspray, the production design was by David Gropman. I'm sorry if I pronounce any of these names incorrectly, with art direction by Dennis Davenport. The Music Man was art direction by Paul Grassi. The Rocky Horror Picture Show, production design by Brian Thompson. The Greatest Showman, production design by Nathan Crowley. Sweeney Todd, production design by Dante Ferretti. West Side Story, production design by Boris Levin. And Les Miserables, production design by Eve Stewart.
That was
my audition for reading at the Oscars.
It was good.
Beautiful.
It was good. Oscar boys. Production designer. Also, I feel like one of the probably top three most like overlooked roles for like student filmmakers and young filmmakers.
Yeah.
They constantly, like, a lot of productions or projects never have them. Yes. But they should,
which
because
is why so many are in the director's apartment with all of their film posters on the wall.
100%. And that's why it's always like, if you can get one, you should get one, because
yes.
you don't always need like a lot of like fancy tricks with camera work or any like post-production stuff to like make your movie or short film look good. Sometimes you just need, you know, good production design and good location. Yeah. And
this is an idea for another podcast here, but Phoenix just giving his sage words of wisdom about what student filmmakers do wrong.
Yeah, because I made two, ooh, so I know everything.
Phoenix the expert.
But you watched a lot of people's.
I did.
Actually, everyone here at the table has watched a lot of student films for various purposes, mostly the Texas Union Film Festival, yeah, at
which
the University
I directed
of Texas
for 2 years.
Yeah.
So I do.
Carter
have
directed for a year, directed that film festival, the Texas Union Film Festival.
Yes.
I shadow directed a year. Shannon has helped out at every year that
I've
she's been
out,
able to.
I've publicized and been in charge of the advertising, largely for.
You said that so
years.
Shamefully, like
the
it's
advertising. No, it's a great time. Okay. Go if you're in the Austin area, definitely go out and support. But yes, there's a whole lot of reasons to watch student films, and there's a whole slew of reasons not to watch student films. But for better or for worse,
right?
Yeah.
There's been a lot.
Long story short, if you're making if you're a young filmmaker, try and get a production designer, because your movie will probably be better for it.
Yeah.
All right. Are we going to go?
Let's jump right into
it. All right. So my definite number one, and I'm not budging on this.
Yeah, bust it out.
Busting it out. It's got to be Les Miserables. It's, I mean, between the sets, they're so elaborate. They're so immersive. The costumes, the kind of like grunge and like muted color palette is like, it's just makes you feel kind of gross, and you get, it's just, it to me is the most immersive film. Like you jump in and you're like, you're there in like that era, and it to me is the, it accomplishes that like to the absolute extreme of like any of these. And there's certainly some that it's like very vibrant and different, but I don't think anything matches the level of just immersion that this one does.
Yeah, I agree mostly, because I have Les Mis is also my number one. I think when you just watch the movie, if all else, I think what you take away is just the amount of like detail and epicness that they try to put into this into this movie. There's a lot of like
the barricade.
There's a lot of attention to the barricade. There's a lot of like different costume changes and costume design that
empty
like
chairs and empty tables.
Yeah, that really like makes the musical. And I agree with you that it does feel the most immersive, partly due to how they shoot it. Though I know we're not, you know, in considering that, but like I do think that it's kind of an immersive feel. I also agree with you that the color palette is pretty unique and pretty well thought out. Because
it's still like very colorful. They're just all like muted.
Yeah,
which and I think is
good for that musical.
Yeah, effective for.
Yeah, because it's still like a musical, so you want to get that like colorful aspect to it, especially with this one with like all of the even the numbers that have colors written for it. But you still get the griminess and kind of like the dirtiness of war and the kind of the dirtiness of like how, you know, it's about the lower class like
mid 19th century France.
Yeah. Exactly. So I also went with that just because I just think it's, you know, extraordinary.
Yeah.
I definitely have to agree with you on Les Mis. There's, when I was looking back through a lot of the stills for this movie in particular, there's so much dynamism between the grunginess and the browns and ochres, if that's what we're calling it, of the buildings. And then you've got the flags, you've got the lapels. It's intentionally done, and it doesn't feel like they just wanted to make everything the exact same shade. There's a depth to this blah that I really dig, and while I do prefer the staging in the theatrical version a little bit more to what we see in the film, it's still like the production design is done with a lot of intention. And ultimately, at the end of the day, this is a world that I want. Yes. at the end of the day, I am another day older. RIP. But yeah, I really like What was I going to say? It's a world that I would want to inhabit, definitely not as someone poor, but like there's a complexity to the design that makes it feel very, very actualized. It was my number three pick, but still within my top echelon.
Yeah. I think my favorite maybe like use of production design in the movie is, I think, in the confrontation when they're between Javert and Jean Valjean, and they have like the sheets kind of like in the room or whatever. It just kind of gives a nice depth to things in the scene, and then it kind of adds more like action in an otherwise like pretty kind of, you know, long confrontation. Like if it was like not a if it was not a musical, it would just be like a yelling match, and then like they would draw weapons. But I like that they add these like sheets to kind of give some like physical barriers to like have them go around, and it kind of makes things a little bit more intense. I mean, it's just as simple as like creating just like little like blowing sheets, and also just stylizes the scene. I think that works really well.
We stan a good hanging sheet in a musical.
Yeah. I love sheets in a movie.
Big fan. The Greatest Showman also loves a good hanging sheet.
That's true.
Good stuff. But anyway, Robbie.
I was not impressed with the Les Mis production design. My number seven for the episode.
Oh.
Wow.
All right. Sound off, Robbie.
We're talking about, I mean, I don't have anything wrong with it. It just, it feels particularly uninspired to me. There's an idea throughout this film that is trying to put the characters from Les Mis, which has, you know, an element of fantastical nature to it as being a musical, with an element of realism, which I think is a great, I guess, philosophy to go with when doing your production design. But what you end up with, in my opinion, is something that looks very real and looks like it didn't take a lot of thoughtful choices. I feel like it is very intentional that they went with a realistic looking, time appropriate, but to me, every other film on this list has elements that were felt like there was some heart put into it from the production designer themselves. I'm not like firm on it being my number seven, but because it lacked some of those, like just those choices that make it interesting, something that makes it feel like it belongs to the Les Miserables movie rather than just any other period piece about the time, just didn't impress me. I think because there are at least elements that make things feel much more like they are working towards the film that is presented towards us, I just had to put everything else above it. I felt like there were some real, real important choices that were made. It's clearly going to go to our number one, I think, or maybe number two now?
Yeah. It depends what y'all's number ones are.
And also where we have them on our rankings.
So... I mean, it's not like something I'm willing to like get in a fight about, but it just like I started making my list and where things fell and where things got pushed around to as I thought about different elements.
Yeah, that's always the hardest part.
It didn't like I said, this is I just don't feel passionately about it being the last one, but also I don't feel passionately about it being much higher.
That's fair. You just had like six other stacked films above. Yeah, that's always.
Yeah, sometimes it is like
the
that.
Most
like,
difficult. Cause
which is
like,
why I'm like, this isn't a hot take because I'm not hot about it. It's just.
Yeah, that's how I felt last week when I had Good Morning Baltimore last because I was like, I don't dislike this opening number at all. I really like it, but it just happened that I like the others more.
Yeah.
Which makes it hard because like we try to pick good movies every season.
Well, we did.
Like, yeah.
We did to it. We picked eight good movies
eight
this
good
season.
Good movies that have really.
You know,
well constructed, well thought out.
Once again, I know I have my biases against this movie in particular. This, once again, has nothing to do with the things I don't like about it.
So what's your number one?
My number one is Hairspray. The design for this film is gorgeous. It is, you know, it's 60s Baltimore, but it's not 60s Baltimore in the same way that we have a period piece with Les Mis. We have a period piece, once again, with Hairspray. I think, for the most part, all of these are period pieces, actually. Except for Rocky Horror, which is a sci-fi, I guess.
Yeah,
not well.
I mean,
it's not a period
Rocky
we've
Horror.
Entered into yet, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is, I mean, And while it's very distinct from the 1988 original film and the Broadway show itself, everything, I was reading about the design and the production altogether, and the philosophy that all roads led back to John Waters really definitely takes, is just a big part of the production design philosophy in this film. Everything is bright and campy and mismatched, and it's so much fun. I love the design of all the Corny Collins show sets. The apartments I can probably take or leave. There's some fun stuff on the walls and some pictures and stuff. But I'm trying to think of Mr. Pinky's Hefty, whatever the shop that they go that sponsors. Yes. I'm forgetting character names now. Tracy.
Yes.
They
and Edna comes with.
And Edna comes with. And yes. The costume design is so great. The hair design, if you want to include just haircuts and stuff.
Definitely. That's, especially for this musical. Yeah. That's key.
Yes. Oh, it's absolutely key. Zac Efron's Link with his little curl in the front is...
His little Clark
Kent. Amount of gel in his hair. Sheen.
It's got so much fun going on in there. It's a world that... it feels like the colors feel like the music of the movie, which is it's a very strange to see a musical where everything all comes together like that. It's a big synergy that just Hairspray is a vibe, like I've said before, and the production design is a huge part of that.
Oh, it's an enormous visual vibe, and I think I disagree with you, and I call when you refer to it as campy. I think the actual colors and the tones and the logic of the palette that's chosen for this movie, I think historically fits with the 70s. The 60s. I'm thinking of the specific paint color that's used in the studio.
There's definitely some choices that are period appropriate.
Yes, and then of course there's some colors and fabrics and textures that are done up in stage fashion, but it's. I have to agree with you. Major high fives, Robbie. I love the production design of Hairspray. It was my number two. But I think something else that's really interesting is even just the design of the classrooms. Attending a university where most of my classes are in buildings that were built around this time or were new around this time, the design of the green tiled bricks on the walls and the really old looking desks. It provides so when the dancing actually happens in the classroom, I feel, I don't know, I'm gravitating toward it, but, it's, there's so much detail done in even some of those smaller sequences that aren't as glitzy, like the studio, but, big costume favorite, for this.
Sorry,
movie.
Just to correct myself. It's Mr. Pinky's Hefty Hideaway. And Mr. Pinky is Jerry Stiller, and it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Yes.
He's Tracy's dad in the original.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that.
He was brought back as a cameo fun casting choice, to the original.
Oh, that's cool.
Very, very cool.
I will also give props to Edna's fat suit. It's specifically designed for this film and specifically designed for how John Travolta wanted to portray the character differently than how Divine had done it in the 88 movie and how it had been done on Broadway before. He liked the idea of Edna being curvy but shy, and so they had presented him with a fat suit beforehand that was much more
revealing, question mark?
No, or not it was just much more round, like just traditional fat suit, very. And he was like, no, she's gonna be curvy and I'm tall, so she's gonna be tall like me. Just the design that went into that, and I'm always a fan of actors understanding their characters in a way that does lend itself into some of the costume and production design there. So props to Travolta, I guess.
Like that. That's a nice detail. That is a very nice detail.
Yeah, that's really good. Mm-hmm.
Shannon,
what's your number one?
My number one is the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Ah.
This is the level of camp, extraness.
This is absolutely
throwing
camp.
Glitter everywhere and frames that are entirely way too furnished, but it works so well, to me at least. I'm thinking of the table that they have their meal at, and it's, you know, revealed that there is a human body there, and they've been eating off of...
They've been eating off of.
Yes, the entire time, but, I mean, everything down to the costuming with Dr. Frankenfurter, between the, you know, and it's simplistic costume design as well, if you think about it, because a lot of their ideas, from what I understand, were grafted from the original stage production. There's...
And that has a lot of history in, like, old Universal Monsters and, like, B-horror movies. Like, there's...
Which we get at the end of the movie with the RKO, you know, tower and the
Think of the stage. Magenta's hair at the end.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which is straight up Bride of Frankenstein, like...
And we get, like, the swimming pool and just the... I mean, how they interact in the water is not necessarily, you know, production design, but I love the incorporation of that element in a way that, you know... We don't see a whole... I mean, we get water scenes in Les Mis with the opening in the ship, and I'm trying to think of where else it becomes really important. But, yeah, I love that design of the pool. I love the costuming. I love the chair, the throne that Frank sits on. There's really... It's so much all at one time. It's a visual assault when you watch this movie, but it's... iconic in my mind. It's like burned into my brain what the design of this film is, and I think the that iconic status to me is what really makes me gravitate toward this film, and I had to put it at number one for that reason.
It's my number two, so that's
not too far off.
So we were having similar trains of thought, just
slightly different.
But I mean, like, when you think about, I mean, this is just a testament to how good the production design is, how much of, like, the audience participation in, like, the midnight screenings of this movie, how much of it's based on background gags and weird things that were put into it. And, like, oh, we took notice of the fact that Janet uses a newspaper to cover her hair, so we all brought newspapers to the screen. Like, just little stuff like that, or, like, oh, like,
the
we're going to get...
The gloves, Frank wears the
party, like, blower stuff, like, all of those things are just choices that were put into the production that, like, people have latched onto.
And this was, like, a really low-budget made film anyway, and the fact that so much of the finances, I mean, well, I don't know exactly the breakdown budget-wise, but, you know, a lot of the time, a movie with a smaller budget, a lot of that budget isn't going to go into production design. It's going to be going into, you know... paying for a lot of people's salaries and that kind of thing. Right. But
it's going into getting you a Susan Sarandon and a Barry Boswick at the behest of the studio, as opposed to, like, using just
actual
the entire
theatrical actors,
the original West End cast or whatever. Like, that's
right. But, like, you know, so much of, or they did so much with so little, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
And
it's
did a
still
great job.
So iconic. So yes, that was my number one. I don't know where that leaves us, though, for our top three. I know Les Mis is going to be...
It's going to be up there.
Yeah.
Les Mis is what? 1-3, 1-1-3, and 7.
Yeah. I don't know if that guarantees it number one, or if we have to keep going.
Simple majority number one.
Simple majority number one.
Yeah. I don't know.
But, I mean, depends on what you guys have at your number two, probably.
Number twos, yeah.
More than anything else, is that's probably what matters more, is figuring out where these fall.
My number two, and it can really be summed up in one word. Hats. The Music Man is my number two.
My number three, so.
It's not just the hats.
It's not just that.
But
the hats are great.
The hats are so good. Just the costumes in this movie are all so on point.
Big suitcases.
Yeah, big suitcases, the prop work.
Are we talking
good.
About set? I guess we're talking a little bit about set design and stuff.
Yeah, it's set design.
The functionality of every room to be able to dance in it and do like a music, you know.
And
that's another thing I put in my Hairspray notes.
To me, also, just like River City itself is so kind of idyllic, and also it's almost kind of like would be a stage prop almost kind of setting.
Oh, that gazebo is rolled in and out on the stage production.
I was going to say, it's all got this kind of very theatrical feel to it, while also being very cinematic, which is kind of how a lot of, like, older musicals like that were. And I think with this one, it nails it with the vibrant colors and just the kind of over-the-top everything. like the band, library, the band staircases. Uniforms. Yeah, the staircases and the library and all of that.
Yeah, I was gonna say all the rows of the tables and the stools behind them that are all like you're able to dance on them and jump up and
all
jump over
76
them.
Trombones and.
The band uniforms are great.
Yeah, band uniforms are great. The hat when they punch the hat and it.
Yes, Robert Preston's
the big meeting room where they're all having the assembly.
Oh yes, the high school gym.
Yeah, the high school gym.
Mm, yeah,
it's yeah. It just to me like everything in it is kind of like just turned up real high on where it's like supposed to be, and it just to me I was like, man, this is the good stuff.
Yeah, people who listen to the show can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure the gazebo from River City is now, or at least was, and is current, because it was all filmed at the Warner lot, first of all, like just because that's how it's done.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's now Stars Hollow, Connecticut for Gilmore Girls.
Yeah. It's the gazebo in the middle of Stars Hollow.
Yes, it's the gazebo.
Wow.
And the high school, which is Stars Hollow High School, and probably the high school in Music Man, is also the high school steps from Greece, I think. So,
okay.
They also use it.
I mean,
interesting they use part genealogy. Of
for Pretty Little Liars, also.
Yes, they do.
Okay, well,
but you get
that's a Grease. You're not in but the just, season, but you know.
But just to give you an idea of like that area of the Warner lot in general. While this isn't maybe a testament to like the production design work specifically for the movie.
Yeah,
that area is a very idyllic is a good word. Like it just it creates this nice little cozy environment that even when you're on a tram at the Warner lot, like. Going around and somebody's like, you may recognize, you know, your guy's like, fans of the CW's Gilmore Girls might recognize this as Stars Hollow. But you feel weirdly at home. Like it's a very nice spot in general. But to go on from, I had to make sure that it was a Warner production to, but it's, yes. River City is good.
Yeah.
The Music Man, good.
Sure.
We haven't even talked about Lil Ronnie Howard yet.
That's true.
Ron Howard.
Ronnie Howard, who I will only refer to him as Ronnie Howard for this season. He is not Ron. He's not Ron Howard. He's Lil Ronnie Howard.
It was weird to like
be like this guy directed Star Wars. Watch
the movie and be like this guy directed Solo.
Yes.
This guy directed Apollo 13.
So when you meet him in person, you will be referring to him.
No, just the season. Just the season where he is credited as Ronnie Howard in the movie.
Ronnie.
I'm sure he gets a lot of PAs who are like Ronnie Howard, and he's like,
shut up.
He's like, I don't.
I'm willing to bet they say, "Hi, Mr. Howard."
Yeah, PAs.
It's like, don't kill me. This isn't a detour situation where everyone calls Richard Linklater Rick.
Yeah, no. I feel like everyone's like, "Hi, Mr. Howard," and then he'd be like, "Oh, please call me Ron."
And then, okay. Maybe say, "Give me a job."
All right, Mr. Howard.
Yes,
that's how most PAs are.
Yeah.
But
there's some weird film school kid. I also like thought. Who's like, I also thought about Ronnie Howard.
Yeah,
and then he'd be like, "Could you get that PA off my set?" PA's being a POS.
wow.
But
fair enough.
I think I also thought it would be funny if someone edited in like the Ron Howard narration from Arrested Development over like little kid Ron Howard.
Yeah.
So they could do it for like Andy Griffith's show or. Or this, or it's like little kid Ron Howard, and then have the adult Ron Howard narration.
Yeah,
but
yes.
You know, what did everyone else put for number two?
Academy Award winner Ronnie Howard.
Yeah,
I had Rocky Horror Picture Show as one, Hairspray is two, and Les Mis is three.
Okay.
I had Sweeney Todd at two, and I think when we're talking about production design. If there's anyone famous for that currently working in Hollywood, it's Tim Burton. He's known for his production design.
He is.
Except, I mean, were you going to say Wes Anderson?
No, I was going to say...
Okay, because he's also up there.
Tim Burton is definitely known for his production design. Yeah. I have qualms about this being maybe one of his least...
Oh, I think this is
in the paint.
I think this is one of his best in version of production design. I just love the... the sets he has in this, like the actual like barbershop itself at the top, like that room is like incredible. It's like got this, it's got like this darkness and this agedness, but also fits like the like scariness and like the horror aspect of this musical itself. I like that it's like the like kind of leaning roof from the top, so you get like the glimpse of him looking out the window. I just think the locations are all really good, like the basement where it's got the meat grinder, it's got the like just the lighting from the fire and the of where he's like burning all the bodies and stuff like that, and then all the blood seeping into the to the drains. Like, it just looks really menacing and disgusting, and just the way they even like do up Sweeney Todd, like costume and his hair in this in this movie. I mean some people I think disliked it. I appreciate it, and I think it's like at the very least a very clear and interesting stylistic choice. I just spit on the mic. Oops, my bad.
Stop rubbing the mic. You get it.
It was just distracting me.
You're sorry. Good.
There's so much. There's so many great costumes in it. I love Pirelli's costume when he comes in. He's got like his very like fancy kind of comically dolled up like suit and like the I don't know what they're called. The little like.
His lapels?
Gold shoulder things and his lapels as well.
Yeah. Shoulder pads? I don't know what you're
talking about. They have names.
They do have names. It's not epaulettes, but...
They're almost epaulettes, but they're...
Kind of.
Yeah. They go where the epaulette would go.
There's some great shoulder pads, though.
Right, yeah. And then they're so, like, well done and comical in this movie, which I also appreciate. I just really think he is known for just, like, setting a tone and setting a look and setting... like a mood with his production design and his costumes, and I think this like nails it to a T. I think there's not a single scene or not a single location or a single costume that wasn't done with such attention to detail and such focus on the character, as well as the way the location relates to the characters in it. So I just think it's really well done.
Yeah,
and that's why I have to give it my number two.
I have this a little bit lower. It's not very low on my list, if that makes...
I have it quite low.
I will say this falls into some of the same things I have with Les Mis, where I feel like there's... A lot of it is just trying to be pretty period accurate. I think there are some great choices that... Where it differs, I think, where there are choices to be made, there are really well-done choices. But we have three, four main locations that are... pretty well done. I like the stairs up to, like, I like the back patio area.
Yeah.
With the stairs up to the barbershop. Like, that's really cool. I like the basement a lot. Pirelli's, that kind of town square area with his, I don't know what to call it, his wagon, his.
Yes, yeah. It's like, what is it? I know what you're talking about.
It's like a sort of open air market.
Yeah.
There's like a word that they bring the shops. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yes. His Pirelli's
emporium.
Rig.
Yeah.
I think there are some really good choices. I think, and I tried to detach it as much, but like, we've seen Tim Burton go real ham on just like some like creating worlds that like you can see, you know, miles into the distance where like stuff's still meticulously designed and like down to the window and stuff like that. And you can see like just huge bold choices being made and stuff like Batman Returns and stuff like that, where just like, it makes no sense to go with it, but, like, he does. Whereas this, I felt like he went a lot more period appropriate and did some... he and his production designers did a very good job of going period appropriate and making those wacky choices where they could. But I don't know if it's one of his best works. And just, once again, another one where things just started pushing it down.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you in that this it's not like a grand piece, or it doesn't make it seem like a very epic film or something like that. I think what I respond to more and really enjoy about it is I think rather than going extremely grandiose and big with this movie, he keeps it very theatrical. And so like all these locations feel very stagey, but still a lot of like action within them. True. And I think it really works for this movie.
Yeah, I don't think that anything doesn't work.
Yeah.
Once again, this isn't my bottom three are all just kind of like, this fits for what they're going for, but there were some really bold choices made with my top four. You know, like that's...
So I have this last.
Yeah.
My biggest problems with it, and it's all perfectly fine and good. I mean, it's not bad. But my biggest problems with it are you have Sweeney Todd, which is already dark. Right?
Yeah.
And then you apply Tim Burton, which almost makes it like, it like compounds that. And to me, I'm like...
The twisted
It's like too dark. It's too dark. I'm like, this movie is almost black and white. Like, it's...
But red when he starts cutting people. Which
and
I also
mean,
think
It helps
good.
With the emphasis, yes. Yeah. But it's like, there's a certain... I'm sure there's a certain creative choice with it being like almost devoid of all color, which I don't think it needed to be. But I was not particularly a fan of it.
Yeah.
And then to me also, I like the, like, my biggest or my favorite set is, like, obviously the barbershop, and then how that kind of moves into the basement and that whole mechanism.
That whole square block of London is pretty good.
That I think is where they kind of got it to the T. And I think the design of Sweeney Todd in particular is fantastic. I think everyone else is, I mean, you know, the judge and
Mrs. Lovett.
Pirelli. And I mean, Pirelli is also one of the more creative, but even Helena Bonham Carter's character
is a Helena Bonham Carter character.
That's I don't think her costume at all is particularly inspired. I don't really think anyone besides Pirelli and Sweeney Todd is particularly inspired. I don't know if it was
Anthony is inspired the whole movie.
I don't know if it was it was the particular era, but a lot of the like VFX backdrops and backgrounds I think do not hold up and do not look good. I think they could have done either a matte painting, and it would have given it more of like a theatrical or like a storybook kind of vibe. But because it's like late aughts, like VFX filling the background, I think it looks very artificial and not particularly compelling. I looked at it, I'm like, that looks very fake. And so that also, it kind of takes me out every time you see a wide shot that's not in like a small room. Anything in the background of like London or when they're arriving on the ship or anything like that. So there were just enough things to pull it down for me that I was like, and I do kind of agree with Robbie's points on Les Mis, but for this movie, where it's just like, he could have done more. And I think like Sweeney Todd's particular character design is the most like Tim Burton-y part of the design of the movie. I think it's very much his like, this was him presiding over being like, this is what the character will look like.
Kind of, and I feel like it's also a very Johnny Depp character as well.
Yeah.
And so some of the same points I actually apply to John Travolta in the Edna costume, I would say give props to Johnny Depp for like really feeling out this character and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say with Johnny Depp, it is his character, but I think he has like a good and bad in his spectrum of his characters, and I think this is like more on the good side as opposed to like maybe the wolf in Into the Woods, which is a very Johnny Depp character on the wrong side of the spectrum,
or Dark Shadows.
Yeah,
yeah. But I would say that like that's actually a good point with Johnny Depp in general. Is all of his characters, whether they're on that spectrum or not, all of their design choices feel very purposeful, and they feel. I don't think that that's a coincidence. It feels like he is at least has some vision for how his character is going to look and be in each of those movies.
And I think that's why he works with Tim Burton so much.
Yeah.
He got, you know, Sweeney Todd's very look. Also, when he was Edward Scissorhands, it's got like a very like extreme look. Ed Wood, like they just kind of go hand in hand.
Sleepy Hollow.
You know, once again, like not a great choice, but like definitely a choice was made with his Willy Wonka. Like,
yeah, it's also true.
Yes. Like, yeah, no, that's not a good point.
Look.
There's design and intention.
They, you know, they together they held that bat and they swung and missed, but like,
yeah,
it was a team
it
effort.
Feels intentional and like the coming together of two people who have a vision for something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tim Burton goes to a 10, and you can't like love it or hate it. You can't fault him for going for broke, I guess.
Yeah. But not really in this.
Yeah. Well, I disagree. With Sweeney Todd, it was my middle of the pack film for production design, at least. It was number 4. There's a lot that I actually do think works, and as far as the this is a very drab movie. There's no way to get around it, but it works. I think for the overall experience of this film, I don't want to be going in thinking, you know, life is a storybook. It is this lustrous, wonderful place. No. It gets me in my edgy scene kid, which was largely non-existent in middle school, feels. I get to live that by watching this movie. And I think that
we all felt those feelings. Just exactly. Some of us didn't outwardly show it. For the better, honestly.
For the better, yes. But, and I think
catch me listening to My Chemical Romance in a polo shirt.
Or Riot by Paramore, anyone? But
100%.
Anyway, going back to Sweeney Todd, I'm such a big fan of like the individual piece design. I really love the barbershop chair, the little chute as the bodies are falling very like, you know, unceremoniously.
The
and the like, what is it? The trunk?
bones.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you go from the Music Man where the guy's carrying his trunk and it's comically, you know, large and thudding, and then, you know, we've got bodies that are being hidden in, you know, the trunk in Sweeney Todd, which I quite enjoyed. Yeah. As far as anything new to add to Sweeney Todd, I enjoyed the design of the judge's, Alan Rickman's office. You're walking in and there's like the old world murals on the walls and the rich...
I just assumed that was Alan Rickman's office. Sorry.
I kind of thought so as well. I imagine, rest in peace, that was what he would have liked design-wise. But yeah, the bookcases, the, you know, the Golden Boss books, and even we've got moments of like... Everything's awash in gold light when we go back in time, the very beginning of the movie. We've got, what else?
Which I think is also a good flip on seeing Sweeney Todd's character.
It's like, great
when he's Benjamin Barker and his hair is very much different. His clothes are very much different.
The flowers, the golden sunlight, everything. There's more like lace and lilies and that kind of thing. There's one
that
other moment.
That scene is particularly well designed. That flashback is very good.
The flashback
Especially
is quite nice.
The kind of dichotomy between
And then when
the
they're at the masquerade.
The future,
and it's like
present past.
And the actress who plays his wife, who is not dead, but then is very dead at the end. I liked the costume design there. Side note, that actress originated the role of Jay in Finding Neverland. She's the original.
Yes, I did. I saw that too.
Lady.
I was going back trying to figure out what
else
she had done.
Johnny Depp was in the film version of in 2004. So that's I thought that was a nice little. Yep. Connection, but it was so overall number four pick. I was okay with with the drabness and the intentionality of some of the choices.
All right, let's get our top three ranked.
Okay,
and then take a break.
Take a break.
Yes.
So number one, have you done the math? Or
let me do the math right now. So
okay, so number one,
we had
Can we just run around and say what everyone's number one was?
So mine was Les
Mis. Les
Mis.
Hairspray.
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay, so let's do Les Mis real quick. So Les Mis is first place, third place, and seventh place.
It's like a solid three, I think, overall.
So yes, that is a three. And then...
I guess depending on where Rocky
else,
Horror and
so
Hairspray...
Rocky Horror, you had one. I had it...
Where do you have Rocky Horror?
I have it five.
You have it a five.
I also have it at five.
Five.
I have it at two.
Two.
That also ended up at a three?
Is a 3.25. So it's
below. Averaging?
A little bit below.
It's below,
What about like a point system? Like if one first places are worth seven and then second places are worth six.
Well, that's a whole.
I feel like this is
easier. That might be an off.
And then.
That might be an off mic
Phoenix
conversation.
Phoenix over here completely destabilizing the order.
I usually just average it because that's usually the easiest.
Yeah.
So where did Les Mis end up
averaged?
So that
means Les Mis is at number one, and then you have
Hairspray
at number one.
Which is one, two, and then...
You have it at two. Where do you have Hairspray?
Three.
I have it at four.
Okay.
That might actually end up at...
So...
That might actually be number one.
That might be number one. Yes, that is number one.
So we end up with number one, Hairspray.
Hairspray. Number
two
Les
Mis.
And number three, Rocky Horror Picture Show.
All right.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
That, yeah. I mean, I'm as good with it as I can be.
Yeah.
Like I said, I took no pleasure in it being my number seven, but it.
Yeah. No, I'm nervous because we've got. I mean,
we've got four more movies left to talk about right after this break. Thanks for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. Before we get back into the action, I just wanted to tell you about a show we have here on the 52.8 Media Network called Tapheads. That's right. Tapheads is a show hosted by yours truly, Robbie DeShazer, along with Carter Spilliards from Film Fracas and our good friend Wendy Lopez. We get together every other week and we drink a whole bunch of beers and talk about what we like about them, what we don't like about them, what we're learning about beers. There's just so much fun to be had. We've tried a whole bunch of different breweries, a whole bunch of different types of styles of beers. We're just having a lot of fun doing this, and I think that... you guys should go check it out. So right after you listen to the second half of this episode, head on over to anchor.fm/tapheads and go listen to our most recent episode. We had a lot of fun making it, and we hope you guys have a lot of fun listening to it. All right, get back to the action.
Two.
What's up? 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 What's up?
All right.
We're back.
Was that the start?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh. All right. Fair enough.
We're back.
What's up?
We're back. Hey.
This is us.
What's up?
Thursdays on NBC.
Hope you liked your top three.
Yeah.
Now we're going to
fight. Now we got our bottom four.
Bottom four.
All right.
We're going to know what my last one was. And Robbie's last one.
Yes. So impress us.
Because
our bottom, we get to decide kind of what loses. So because our bottoms are at the top.
Yeah.
My number.
Quite a versatile episode.
My number three.
Your number three. Oh, you didn't even get to your number three.
No. My number three is The Greatest Showman.
That's my number four.
And where I'm at with
this... It is The Greatest Show.
Shannon's already shaking her head. Where I'm at with this is... I think we're together.
Okay.
I think we're together on this.
wow.
Make your argument, though.
Anyway.
I can be persuaded.
I think Carter and I are about to make the same argument.
Where I'm at with The Greatest Showman, and I talked about this on the last episode, it's very much like the algorithm movie. Like, they were like, this is what makes a good musical. If we do all of it really well, it'll be a good movie. And it's like... When it comes together, you can ultimately take it or leave it. But to me, like, I love just the design of this movie because it is very much like someone was like, all right, what's the perfect design for a musical? And they were like, this is what we need. And it's got the bright colors. It's got some fantastic, like, astonishing costumes. The design of the circus, the design of the museum, the design of the fucking rooftop. It's, I think... One of the most
hanging sheets.
If I remember correctly, like in my research, it was I think the most recent movie to employ like large matte paintings for a background, like seeing the moon and everything like on the back of the terrace of their apartment. That's all this gorgeous matte painting, and it just gives it a very kind of storybook feel. And
the city feels lived in.
Yeah, it feels lived in, and it's like it. This one. Has that kind of fantastical quality while still feeling somewhat grounded. Like, it doesn't feel like it takes place in another world. But it's still very kind of over the top and fantastical. And, like, this one does not feel like it's done on a stage. This one feels like it's in a world, in its own world. And very, very kind of cinematic in that respect.
They pull off something which I give a lot of props to, which is, same with Music Man as well. Which is having...
The bar also.
I was going to say, costumes that everyone wears as it's a period piece and has to be in costume.
Mm-hmm.
And the then costumes too. Within that within that movie, that show where you have to then show that this is a step above and this is more theatrical.
Yeah, the Barnum's Mansion, I think, is done really well. And just kind of the whole design of the mansion itself. And there's still a lot... There's always a lot happening, and it's very kind of like in your face the whole time. But I think that's to its benefit. And yeah, I love all of Barnum's costumes.
The museum is really good.
Yeah, everything is fantastic.
There's a lot going on.
Zendaya
in there.
And her pink hair and all that, doing the trapeze and stuff, I think is great.
Her hair is pink.
that's your take?
I mean, I'm just saying it's true.
Rebecca Ferguson's like dress when she's performing, all that's beautiful. That whole opera hall is beautiful.
Absolutely, yeah. The Palace of the Queen of England, when they go there, is very good. I mean, it fell very middle of the ground. It's not in my top three like it is Carter's. It's my number four, which my four and five are this and Sweeney Todd, which are about pretty interchangeable middle of the pack for me, at least. They did a very good job with this one. Like I said, the streets of, is it New York? Or is it, it's some northeastern town, feel very lived in. There's a lot of activity going on.
They make the whole joke about New York real estate.
Oh, yes, they do. But I mean, everything just like, to create a period piece that feels so active, like which, I mean, some of that's blocking and cinematography as well, so I can't give it all to that, but like, much more so than some of the other period pieces, which feel like sets and feel like, yes, this was painted to be dirty, or this was, you know, this is this way because it's designed that way. Like, it feels like it has a real life to it, which is really nice. Like I said, the costumes for everyone in the circus are very good.
Mm-hmm.
Zac Efron's costumes are all very good. Hugh Jackman's costumes are all very good.
Yeah.
The Critic has a very fun costume and hair design and stuff with that, which is a lot of fun. Yeah, I don't have much else to say about this.
I mean, the people featured in the circus, like the tallest man and the fattest man. It's like his whole
the whole place. Napoleon get up the for Napoleon Tom get up. Thumb is great.
Yeah, the bearded lady in her dress.
Yeah. But, yeah. And everywhere, everywhere that he finds, like, his performers are pretty
it
cool
is
looking
done
places.
Yeah. Very well. Once again, the sheet with the bearded lady, very important.
Yeah.
Like, big engagement with the production design. Which I think is really nice when, you know, your narrative depends so much on the production design. Because there's definitely some movies where it's like, oh, okay, you know, what you're wearing and the, you know, the world you're living in isn't, it kind of takes a backseat to the actual performance. But I actually did enjoy the production design in The Greatest Showman quite a lot. It hit all the boxes. It was vibrant. But not like crazy cheap looking, which was fine with me. I really liked in the beginning of the film, the scene where we're going back in time and seeing the development of P.T. Barnum when they're kids and the little, you know, what is it? It's like a isolated little garden that they in the home that they both step into. I really like that quite a lot. It just fell lower and lower on my ranking. That was kind of where I was. It wasn't coming from a place of disdain like it may have been last week. But
you didn't speak up last week.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
You get to speak up now.
I mean, the thing is, it's not a bad movie. I think, you know, we go back to the fact that we've selected all these movies because they're good and
they are
they're relevant.
They are of a quality.
They are of a quality that we want to explore. And
we don't talk about bad movies on this podcast.
Not yet. I think that would be really cool to do a season of just like bad movies, but that's my pitch. But otherwise,
you could do a Wes Anderson season.
Ooh. Anyway,
we're gonna have to cut Phoenix.
Yeah,
famous hot take.
There's mic cut out there for a minute.
But
this guy.
It wasn't ultimately enough for me, Greatest Showman wise, to boosted over, you know, some of the other picks that I had in between, which is why it was my number six. I didn't want it gone, though, so I think that says something growth-wise.
This, the last thing I can say is that it makes the right choices, but maybe doesn't go for anything particularly bold. I mean, circuses are very much associated with bright primary colors, so there's a lot
it's
of bright primary colors in this.
I just like the through line of it's kind of in everything. Because it could have just been the circus.
Yes, that, and I agree with that. That does
But the fact that they have it in, like, the Victorian mansions and in, like, the opera halls and kind of everything is this vibrancy. And even, like, the terrace in their apartment has this kind of vibrant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it does, I mean, it's very cliche to do this, but I do like that the people who are kind of believers in what Barnum is doing tend to have more vibrant colors and vibrant choices with what is going on. And then even people who like go, you know, choose or like are persuaded by him then become more vibrant, like Zac Efron.
Like Zac Efron's,
like he's got a big stodgy scarf at the beginning and that's probably never seen again till he has to go pretend to be a part of the upper crust when he does. So I mean it's always a good choice. Like it's the good, easy choices, but like what that does for me is it puts it right in the middle of the pack. Like, there's not a bad choice here.
I had it last on my list.
Sorry, you're muted? What are you saying?
Phoenix is gone.
I had it last.
You have 5 minutes of time out for Wes Anderson. Yes, you're in everyone's mic.
Okay, cool.
You're not actually muted. You've never been muted.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate
you're
it.
We're letting you speak freely.
Yeah.
Until you start talking about pasta and that your mic's unplugged.
Yeah. We don't need to get into that.
Anyway. That's strictly a household
that's for food
fracas argument. I don't know. I mean, I don't really have anything like I don't really have much to say about it. I just feel like it's a lot of stuff that's fine, but I don't love any of it. So just when I look at the other movies, there's a lot of like things that I could really talk about that I really enjoy with the production design. And there's nothing really faulting with this one. Like, there's nothing that I'm like, that's like wrong. That doesn't look good. Everything just feels okay by the books. And that maybe why that might be towards your point about it being kind of like a Netflix algorithm kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Nothing feels like great. Nothing. It just all feels okay in terms of its production design. So I just have to have it last. I don't dislike it, but as far as these other movies where I actually have like moments that I can feel like real enjoyment and real like real in awe, mm-hmm. this one I'm just kind of left being satisfied, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So it's last.
So
okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah. It's a very regular answer.
Four?
My number four is Sweeney Todd.
Okay. What's your number three?
My number three was Hairspray.
Yeah. So what's your number four?
My number four.
What's your next one?
My number three was Les Mis. Never mind.
Okay. Yeah.
My number three was Hairspray, which we talked about. And then my number four.
Do you have anything to add to the Hairspray conversation? Shannon and I dominated
that. I have it kind of. I have it somewhat lower. It's my number four.
Yeah. I have it at three. I really like it, and I'm glad that y'all had it higher, just because I think it was. I mentioned off mic before the podcast that I was like debating between two movies, and it was Sweeney Todd and Hairspray, and that I didn't know which one I wanted to rank higher or lower, and I ended up putting Sweeney Todd above it. But in reality, I kind of have them a little bit tied.
Yeah.
Hairspray is really well done, and it's. I think y'all are bouncing around like whether it's like camp or like kind of realistic or something like that. I enjoy the kind of like it kind of reminds me of like just like it's like very poppy and like mm-hmm. kind of like bubblegummy and a little Americana-esque, where it's just everything just feels like in a bottle of its own kind mm-hmm. of like fun fair and mm-hmm. I think to Robbie's point about the hair, it's extremely well done and in a musical called Hairspray, and adapting the musical itself, it's got to be like amazing, and I think they nail it in this. The costumes are all really wonderful. The sets are great, especially the finale set, which is and is like incredible. I love the TV show, the Chris Cornell show set. There's just a lot of
the Chris Cornell show,
or not? Chris Cornell is the Soundgarden. What's his name?
Corny Collins.
Corny Collins. That's hilarious. Could you imagine the Soundgarden Hairspray?
Wow. Everyone's just shooting heroin at the end.
I know.
It'd be wild.
What a tragic
man. Come together with your hair.
That's like a sketch idea. Okay, anyways.
We ended segregation. Everybody do heroin now.
We got this new drug out on the market. It's called heroin. All dancing around.
We got the beat. It's just black holes, son. No, yeah, I mean, like, the musical by its nature is just so vibrant mm-hmm. and wonderful and such like, a spectacle to watch. And it's so fun, and I think this movie just nails it on, like, every level in terms of production design. So I'm glad it's as high as it was.
Yeah. I also kind of had it, because I have it number four, I had it kind of tied with Greatest Showman for all intents and purposes. The only reason I gave Greatest Showman a little edge, I don't know how to describe it. There's a certain, like, veneer to the whole kind of aesthetic of Hairspray, that it's almost like too glossy. Not that it needs to be like gritty or realistic, but it's like it's almost like too much like a playset kind of thing.
Yeah, needs a little Chris Cornell.
Needs a little
bit of heroin.
Just a little heroin. But yeah, to me it was like because they're both very like kind of idealistic playsetty kind of
heroin
thing.
Jokes.
But yeah, there's just something about Hairspray that I'm always like this. Feels very like clean and polished, almost like too much.
Oh, that's why I love it. Like, because it is so. It's such a weird. Like, I mean, we don't have to fight about it anymore. Yeah. It's our number one. But I love that because it is like this off kilter John Waters version of like 60s Baltimore. Yeah. Like, which you don't get to see a lot of Baltimore.
Else you see Baltimore,
general.
The Wire.
Yeah. Like you, but you don't
two
get
two very different images of one town.
Yeah,
yeah. You don't get to like, and I love that like lens that John Waters takes to things, which is this like so sanitized, it's almost dirty like lens, and I think which is much more present in his other films mm-hmm. and stuff. It's a very weird way of thinking about things, but I'm glad that they took the little seeds of that and like. Brought it into something that is entirely its own.
Yeah. And I mean, like, not to get too, like, in, like, themes or motifs of the film, but I think, like, the reason why it's called Hairspray is, like, focusing on, the, like, on the product itself, it's like, you know, it's packaged and it's made to sell, it's artificial and stuff like that. And I think that kind of like, that resemblance kind of leads, it like kind of bleeds into the production design of the movie and why it's so glossy and pristine, because it's like fake and artificial and meant to sell a product. So you're not really supposed to fully love the gloss. Like, the gloss is kind of supposed to disturb you a bit because it's not real. And it's like, that's why I think it actually works really well with the musical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's only one movie we haven't talked about yet.
Chris Cornell.
the Soundgarden musical.
Should we
it's my number four. Can I say it? Can I go into
Sure.
it? Yeah. West Side Story.
This my number six.
Yeah.
Also my number six.
I brought it down where I originally had it. But I think one thing that can't, and I think I know why y'all have it low, and it's probably because of like, that's why I have it kind of in the middle of the road. Is the like kind of locations and sets are pretty like normal and not really, they seem kind of cliche or kind of regular. They're just like streets or back alleys, and some of the like interiors just seem kind of like regular homes that don't really have much detail to it. But I think what really stands out about the musical is I think it really gets into like the costumes are where it really sells it in this thing. And especially how with this musical being about like these different gangs and like one side and another side, those costumes seem to really like contrast each other really well. And I think the costume designer really make them pop in like a musical sense, but also kind of have them reflect kind of each gang's like kind of scope on life, and then kind of contrasting each other. There's like different things that I really like about the costume in this that they kind of like, it's difficult that they were able to do, but I think they successfully do in the way they handle it. And I don't think, while the sets are maybe a little bland, I don't think they're necessarily wrong with...
They're authentic.
Yeah, they're authentic to the world. So that's why I kind of have it middle of the road at number four. Mm-hmm. I just think the costumes, I think, win it over for me.
That's certainly the highlight to it.
For the production design.
Yeah, for the production design aspect. And yeah, this one is much more like, this is just what it is.
Yeah.
And it's like, by virtue of everything else being a little bit more larger than life, a little more detailed, they all get a place above it. But I don't think it's bad. Like you said, I think it's appropriate for the movie. It's just, it's all pretty regular.
Yeah.
So that's where I had it at number six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had it at number seven, and largely just because when I watch West Side Story, I don't prioritize, like, my experience is not wholly defined by the production design, and I'm not going into it necessarily for the look. I'm going for the score. I'm going for the acting performances,
the choreography,
the spectacle of, like, organizing bodies, not necessarily organizing objects. It, once again, though, that's not to say that this is like, it wasn't a film that I put number seven with a beef for it being voted off. I think a lot of what Carter said, it's a perfectly fine looking musical. It fits in the 1961, world that, you know, that it was released in. And I'm going to be incredibly interested to see what Steven Spielberg does with his adaptation of it, with knowing, you know, this being its, predecessor. But movies one through six really, really
and with Steven Spielberg's knack for production design as well, we'll see what
what he has to add to this.
People were very unimpressed with the first image.
Yep,
they're all in brown and it's very dreary.
So my take on this is there's not a lot going on here for me. Like I don't think there's much I can add on to it. Everything that is in there that is jumped off of or used as a tool for the choreography feels very functional and does not feel out of place, which is
good.
Something that when you are, you know, not prioritizing production design, you can end up with like that black box theater feel where it's like, this is a brown box right here in the middle of this character's bedroom so they can jump off it or whatever, you know. So you don't end up with anything like that, but like it just wasn't super emphasized in a way that so much care went into everything else that it exists in a world and it doesn't feel bad, but
I'm going to watch a musical to be part of the world or to be inspired by the world largely. So,
and the inspirational aspects of this film are not the production design.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay. tally wise, we have okay. So we've got 1 through 3.
Where'd you
what's
have the
four?
Music man?
The Music Man. I had my number 5.
Okay. Do you have anything to say? I don't know that you talked about much.
The hats are amazing, and the slice of, you know, Old Town America is...
Old Town Road.
Old Town Road, Lil Nas, Black Horse, yes, also fits very well within this dichotomy. But no, I like it a lot. It's one of my favorite aspects of the movie, but it's still, I don't know, it wasn't enough for me to have placed as my numbers 1 through 3. I was more inspired by... some of the other movies we had selected this week, but still done very well. We really need to get together, do an episode about ranking the best hats of this film. But
all right. Ooh, good bonus episode content.
Yeah. That's
because we're heading into the Christmas season where we'll probably do a couple of bonus
expect
episodes.
Expect a
anyway.
5-hour episode for that. Talk
it's
about hats.
Going to be great. Speed but yeah, so it was my number 5. But 4 would be.
So we can do the math real quick. We got some diverse rankings.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yes.
So let's look at Greatest Showman. I had that 3.
I had it 4.
You had it 4. You had it 7.
Yeah.
And you
6.
Had 6. Okay. So then that's a 5. And then what else do we have?
Music Man.
Music Man. I had it 2.
I had it 3.
I had it 6.
6.
Ooh. Five. I want to hear your takes then. I want to hear why you put it so low.
Again, it's mostly just because of how much I prefer the others to it. I also feel like with Music Man, while there are moments of awe and in the production design, particularly with the ending, with like the band itself and the costumes and, you know, the hats. I mean, we've already discussed as it is. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I really care too much about the locations in this film. I know it's like trying to go for like a small town, Iowa. Iowan kind of feel to it, but none of them really feel that they feel like they don't really have an identity to me. They kind of just seem just, you know, like places for action to be held in. They don't necessarily feel a part of like, I don't think I would see it and think this is a Music Man area. I just think I would think it's just some kind of place. So I feel like the location could be a little bit better, could have had more detail towards it. But I don't necessarily dislike it for that. I just think it's got some qualms in that when compared to the other movies, I just think.
Yeah.
I would say that the costume design in The Music Man outweighs the set design.
Yeah.
But
that's what made me keep it at 6 because I was debating on it between 6 and 7, but I just feel like the costumes in The Music Man definitely deserve some praise, whereas like going back to The Greatest Showman, I just didn't really have much like real response to it in like costume or location, but at least with Music Man, I can have costume praise. Yeah. So I gave it 6.
Where'd you have West Side Story?
4.
Okay. And then what's the only one we have ranked? Sweeney Todd?
Sweeney Todd, yeah.
Sweeney Todd.
2nd.
I have it at 5.
2, 4, 4.
You
five.
You have Sweeney Todd at 4?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So 2, 4. You hit it 5?
Yes. So let's go down the list.
So,
our number 4 spot is then going to be...
Our number 4 spot is... number 4 spot is going to be The Music Man.
All right. Our number 5...
Our number 5 spot is going to be Sweeney Todd.
Number 6.
Number 6 is going to be Greatest Showman.
Which means?
And then West Side Story is our
loser
number
of the
7.
Week.
Yeah.
Wow. We are just killing the classics.
Killing the classics. Ooh. Episodes 1, 2.
Well, people are hating on The Greatest Showman and it just keeps surviving.
Told you.
Guess you're not feeling pretty tonight, West Side Story.
Damn.
That's 2 West Side Story songs in that one sentence.
Yes.
Good joke, Phoenix. Thanks, Phoenix. I appreciate you, Phoenix. Good
keep
job,
going.
Phoenix.
Keep going. No, no, keep going. Keep going. You're going
to
do this?
Come on.
Go. Go
I'd
for
like
it.
To be in a film fracas. Don't let me in a film fracas.
Go and listen to film fracas.
You're the loser tonight on film fracas.
Yep. So West Side Story has had its
throat
slit
and thrown down
and
a
shoved
chute.
Down a chute. Via
grinded
elaborately
into
designed
ground, ground into a meat pie
and sold to people probably with tuberculosis.
Yeah.
So.
Movie on fire. Movie on fire.
All right. Well,
All right, yeah.
That's that.
This has been this episode of Film Fracas. Let's do some recommendations and some sign-offs.
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at CA Spillers, like spill something yarn and NS. My recommendation this week is... Shoot. Let's go with A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, the new Marianne Heller film about... it's not actually about Mr. Rogers. It's about Lloyd Vogel, who's the writer of the article about Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers just kind of factors into the movie. But it's actually a really good drama. It's all very well made. Tom Hanks gives an interesting performance. I still haven't 100% decided if I liked it or not. But it's definitely unique. And the kind of... Some of the cinematography on it's fantastic. And there are some sequences that are just... kind of wild. And Matthew Rhys, who plays Lloyd Vogel, is fantastic. He's excellent.
All right. Shannon?
You guys can find me on Letterboxd at ZedsDead5. I'm going to be recommending Queen and Slim this week.
Ooh, I want to see
which
that so bad.
Has yet to come out. It's coming out not Thanksgiving Day.
Did you see it at AFF? Or
there was an advanced screening they were showing of it last week that was quite good. I enjoyed it a lot more than I don't know what my expectations were for it, but most Bonnie and Clyde situations or adaptations thereof, I'm not too big a fan.
None of them are as good as Bonnie and Clyde.
True, you make a fair point. But I quite enjoyed it. Daniel Kaluuya gives a wonderful performance, as well as Jodie Turner-Smith. The cinematography is
astounding,
absolutely wonderful, really and it really gives new meaning to, like, you know, the conception of a road trip along racialized lines that I thought was very smart. So I would definitely recommend seeing it if you have the chance.
Cool.
I am at Bombas Phoenix on Twitter. Hope to follow me there. I tweet things I hope you'll like. I forget if I recommended or if we recommended beforehand The Irishman. Did that happen?
I don't think it's happened yet.
I don't think so.
Okay, I'll recommend The Irishman. It's Scorsese's new movie.
3.5 hours.
It's his Netflix TV show.
Yeah, it's his Netflix TV movie.
It is a
his Netflix TV theme park. But... It's really good. I enjoy it. I hope the runtime doesn't scare you because it's really fun. It's got
it's good.
It's really a really well told story. Kind of deals with something I think Scorsese hasn't touched on, believe it or not, despite his like extremely long and prestigious career. Deals with, like, you know, aging and kind of coming to terms with your life.
It's a kind of being Irish this year.
Yeah.
The Irishman and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's
Getting older
directors
self-reflection
on getting old.
Which, you know, I think he does really well, and I think it's pretty powerful, especially towards the ending where I think it's kind of wild that Martin Scorsese can still, like, surprise us with stuff when you think he's done everything and can do everything. But really well done. It's going to be on Netflix and it's 3.5 hours, so just know that. Don't let it scare
just,
you.
Like,
it's
turn
it's
your
good.
Phone off and put it away, because if you pull out your phone in that movie, then you're going to be on a whole movie.
If it makes you feel better or makes you want to see it more, I actually felt like it was pretty well paced for a 3.5 hour movie.
Excellent pacing. So it is long, though.
It doesn't necessarily. You don't feel it as strong as you might think you would. So, but just know that going in.
It is pretty well paced.
All right,
you see can in the theater if you can.
Yep. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Robbie DeShazer or at Robbie_DeShazer on Instagram, I guess. Follow Tapheads, our other podcast. Carter and I talk about beer with our good friend Wendy. On my Twitter, I should be putting out my list of the top 100 films of the decade soon, and that'll link to my letterbox, which I can't think of my username on right now. Other than that,
Chris Cornell fan, 1996.
It's Black Hole Spoon Man. I'm going to recommend something. Because we took this 6-month break in the middle of the year, I forgot that, like, it came out and we didn't recommend it. And I'm surprised. I'm going to take this from Phoenix. I'm recommending The Lonely Island's The Unauthorized Bash Brothers Experience.
It's good.
Oh, man. Is that the best movie of the year?
Maybe.
Or is it the best movie of the decade?
It's in a league of its own.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah.
The Unauthorized Bash Brothers Experience. Kind of a musical. It's in the vein of... It's a visual album. It's in the vein of...
Lemonade.
Beyonce's Lemonade. Yes.
And that's only like 25 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real short.
If you don't want to see The Irishman... Because you're pressed for time. Check out Bash Brothers.
If you block out 4 hours for The Irishman thinking you're going to stop and get a snack and you get so sucked in that you don't, and then you've just got an extra 25 minutes at the end of that 4 hours you blocked out.
Yeah, just pop Bash Brothers right after that.
Yeah.
You're good to go. That's a good 4 hours of your day.
They're both on Netflix. Go watch it.
All right.
Yeah.
So follow the show.
Follow the show. Follow us.
Follow us. Follow.
Follow the drinking gourd.
At Tap Heads.
Yeah, at Tap Head Show.
At Tap Head Show. Follow us at Film Fracas and keep watching.
Follow 5208 Media at 5208 Media.
We still have merch?
Yeah, we technically do. I link to it in the show
merch.
Notes of every episode.
Do it.
I haven't checked on that in a couple months. We may have sold some stuff and I don't even know.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That's it.
Real quick. This is something I've been meaning to mention each episode. If you do want to support us, there is a way to do it. Online through Anchor. So you can go to anchor.fm/filmfracas and you can kind of do a pledge for a monthly donation. It helps keep the show going. It helps get us to come out here each week. So if you feel so inclined to do that, that is available. Other than that, this has been a great episode of Film Fracas. We will talk to you guys next week. Are we going to do the barbershop quartet?
Yeah, ready?
Bye bye. Bye
bye.
That was so bad.
Yeah, not good.
Oops. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there are a lot of shows on the web, and we are so glad you took the time to listen to ours. Thanks to Carter Spilliards, Phoenix Arola, and Shannon Widener for helping to write and produce each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever it is you listen. It really does help get the word out about the show. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Film Fracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode.